Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is The Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is The Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Compliance Guide. It is Tuesday. It's hard to believe. Already August 15th in 2023. I know I say this all the time, but I mean, literally, we are now 15 days into the month of August, 8 months into this year. So anyways, I could talk about my disbelief on this for 20 minutes, and it's just not going to change anything. So with that said, we know that it is a Tuesday, and that means it's time for a hashtag Terry Tuesday. And I get to welcome my very good friend, Terry Fletcher, who's
good morning
hanging out with me today. Hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm good. I love how we have a little bit of a, we have a little bit of a crisp morning today. So I had my window open. And then, of course, the dogs start barking. The kids are going to camp and screaming. So I'm like, okay, let's close that. And I almost killed myself. So if you need to edit that out, I apologize.
Nah, I think that's part of what makes this show fun. So I'll leave it in there. I'm sure there's
going to be like, whoa, what was that? They'll wake people up, right?
There you go. So today, we're going to stick with telehealth and in-person visits, or being told that you can't have an in-person visit and all you can do is telehealth.
Yeah.
And that's not cool.
No, it's not. And there's people seem to think that the governing body on a lot of this stuff is only CMS and HHS. And you and I know the Office of Civil Rights has a lot to say about telehealth.
They do. And listen, while we have effectively come out of the public health emergency now for a little while, the proposed rule that we talked about on Monday, yesterday, we have it coming up today, Tuesday.
Yeah. Tuesday. I think your lack of air conditioning last 2 days has fried your brain.
Yes. So living here in South Georgia, you know, our heat index yesterday was 111 degrees.
Oh, man.
And it was 96 degrees outside. And not having AC was just not a good recipe for trying to do podcasts yesterday. It just wasn't going to happen. So right after we're done with this podcast will be our coding and compliance roundtable. So anyways, enough about that. We'll talk about the Medicare fee schedule rule changes, rule changes in just a little while. Anyways, let's dive right in, Terry, because you know, I think our listeners need to understand what's going on.
Okay, well, first, let's remind everybody, and since we just mentioned the Office of Civil Rights, and again, a lot of you are NAMIS members who and doctors management who took my telehealth audit risk on August 2nd for them. And one of the things I want to remind you is that, remember, the public health emergency ended on May 11th. You had 90 days extension to make sure all of your telehealth platforms were HIPAA compliant. That's HIPAA with two A's, compliant. And that means that using any kind of Skype, using FaceTime, Google Hangouts, anything that was free, think of that, always follow the money. And there's some DoxyMe that you can use, but there's still some things in there that you have to pay for. That means that it expired on August 9th, which was last Wednesday. So if you're still allowing patients to use those platforms, what the Office of Civil Rights and HHS have said is that now you are not only in violation, but they will start imposing violations and, you know, how that works and fines and things like that. So remember, HIPAA did not go away during the public health emergency. It was the violation and fines for violation were put on hold because people were scrambling to figure out how to see patients virtually. So they said, okay, as long as you act in good faith, actually, let me reword that. They said, as long as you don't act in bad faith, which we've seen a lot of bad actors, both Sean and I have seen all kinds of nonsense out there. See, I kept it clean, Sean, but it's been terrible. So let's start there, where basically you have to have the platform that's appropriate. So there's a lot out there, and we're not a commercial message, so we don't want to tell you all of them, but let's just give you a little bit of insight on a couple things. Follow the money. If you pay for it, it's most likely going to be HIPAA compliant, but check the BAA, and they should ask you to sign one. So the, you know, business associate agreement. Next, if you're saying, well, we found one that says they're HIPAA compliant and it's free. Remember, there's either a membership fee for the patient, or there's a per patient fee for the physician's office. So don't always say, well, they told us this. That's like saying, you know, well, she said it was true. How many times, Sean, have we heard an office say, well, that's the way we've always done it because that's what they said. And we can't find out who they was.
Yeah. There's never a name.
There never is.
It's just, well, they always did it this way, and they always told us to do it this way.
I know.
Frick is they.
I know. We roll our eyes. We've heard ourselves rolling our eyes on that. But sticking with that theme, now let's continue with the OCR. One thing that there is a, and I don't want to call it a pamphlet. It's kind of, I sent it to you this morning. I know you already had it, but you know that thing that they put out? It's kind of like, it's a 17-page document. Let's say it's a toolkit. And it's called C2C, and the CMS puts it out. And it basically is C2C, coverage to care, telehealth for providers, what you need to know. And I think people stop reading it after they read the first pages. Because if you look at page 17 through 19, it talks about those considerations for various patient populations. And one of them, or a couple of them, we have people with disability, blind vision loss, deaf patients. We have patients with speech disability, non-English speaking patients. And what I've seen, Sean, and I don't know if you've seen it, but I've just started to see letters. One practice had one from OCR, the Civil Rights Office. One had it from HHS. Another one had it from a commercial payer saying that we got a complaint, and it's usually a patient complaint, that you don't have options for telehealth for patients with disabilities. And I haven't dealt with violations on that before, so it was a surprise to me. Have you? What are the what kind of happens to people that violate the Disabilities Act?
Yeah, I mean, listen, violating the ADA is never advised under any circumstances, but the most often what happens with an ADA case, you know, there are penalties and fines, but what happens in most cases is where the individual who has been discriminated against will actually bring a civil action against the culprit, if you will. And I hate using that term because it's such an ugly word, culprit, but against the offender. And most of those wind up getting settled, insurance companies, you know, general liability, you know, E&O.
Let me interrupt you for a second so you don't think culprit's such a bad word. You know what I think of that? Remember in the days where we had McDonald's with the hamburglar? They used to call him the culprit. So I always see him running around the tables at one of the live McDonald's chasing the grimace. Okay, go ahead. That's the culprit. See, it's not that bad. It's just like, it's for those of you that are not as old as us, you have to be at least 50. There used to be a hamburglar, which was like a little guy with a, he had
black
a jail
and
suit
white
on.
Jail suit. Yep.
And
with the eye thing.
He was a little thief and that was in jail running around stealing French fries and hamburgers. He was the hamburglar.
you know what's so sad about that?
That just popped into my head.
I know, but you know what's so sad about that?
What's that? Like, it's a good memory.
It is. But you know, the sad thing is we couldn't have a hamburglar today.
Oh no, we couldn't.
People would for whatever reason find something inappropriate about the hamburglar. I mean,
right. But they brought back the Grimace shake, which just seems gross. But anyway, we're just talking about childhood memories. I didn't want Sean to think culprit was such a bad word. I think it's funny. Right.
Fair enough.
But it's not funny in this what we're talking about. It's definitely not good.
So my experience with ADA cases, and I've unfortunately had to assist some clients through a few of these, most of these, somebody's just looking for compensation and they're looking for the offending entity to change the way that they're doing things.
Which becomes more expensive than doing it right to start.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, listen, I always encourage people to do the right thing the first time. Yeah, would it put me out of business? Probably. But you know what? I think I'm smart enough to figure out how to reinvent myself, and I'll figure out something else to do. I don't know.
You and I will always have a job with what goes on right now in healthcare. It's never, ever going to change. Please. But when talking about the disability thing, I think that practices sometimes don't understand that. Well, let's just put it out there for what's happening right now. There's some practices, which is wrong. They're denying care to, let's say, the LGBTQ community. You can't do that. There's certain patient populations you have to serve. And this is one of those populations, you know, disability patients. And when you get into picking and choosing what populations you'll serve, if you offer the service, let me back that up. If you offer telehealth, you have to offer it to everyone. You can't say, well, I'll give it to you, but I won't give it to you. And, you know, in some practices say, well, I only give it to the patients whose payers pay. Oh, boy. You still have to give the patient the option if they want to pay themselves, but you have to still give them the option for the service. And I haven't seen a lot of EMRs or telehealth hardware setup that really accommodates that deaf patient or that blind patient, or, you know, just the challenged patient from a disability perspective. And the coverage to coverage rule says you have to. This is not optional. Sean and I are not sitting here saying, well, if you can, try to make it work. No, we're saying if you offer telehealth post-PHE, and actually it was during PHE as well, you have to serve the patient population in front of you.
That's right. So you know, trying to pick and choose the patient populations that you're going to provide services that should be rendered across the board to, based on which insurance company is the best payer or which insurance company pays. Now, I mean, listen, if an insurance company has a service that's excluded from coverage, you still want to be able to offer the service to the to the patient, but letting them know that there is no cost share. The total cost is your burden, because your insurance company, if you chose, you know, a high deductible health plan, you know, HDHP, you know, it's on you. You know, you're the one who chose that. You know, but I'll tell you today, I don't know that there's any insurance plans that are that great anymore. I remember, you know, years ago when I was griping because, you know, my annual deductible was $1,500 and my maximum out of pocket was like $2,000 or $2,500. And now I pay like $800 a month for my insurance, and my deductible is $3,500 and my out of pocket is like $5,000. And I'm just like, goodness. You know,
the best insurance right now are for healthy people. So if you are a Medicare Advantage plan and you're super healthy, and you're, let's say, I'll put out my husband for a second. He's super healthy guy, but he is on cholesterol medication and hypertension medication, but he's well controlled. He's been on it for, you know, a few years. He gets his meds and he goes in and does his blood work. And I mean, he never has an issue. He's kind of obnoxious with his, I have to ride 60 miles a week and he swims every day. Yeah. We don't like him sometimes, but, but my point is he thinks his United Healthcare, Medicare Advantage plan is the best thing ever. And maybe it is for him, but because he only pays $26 a month premium, and he's like, and I can go to any gym I want to. They give me a $15 stipend a month to go to CVS and get deodorant or whatever I need. And he talks about the, and I'm air quoting extras, you know, and yeah, because you're a healthy person, you know, he doesn't pay more than I think for his meds, $15 a month. And so, yes, that's great insurance for that person. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the, like you said, the high deductible plans and other things, it's tough. But coming, kind of circling back around to our conversation on access, The other thing that I'm finding, so the first one is making sure that you're using the right platform. The second thing is making sure that you're good with the disability population. You have to make sure that's okay. But I'm noticing, and I'm getting this from clients, actually, she's like, how do I get my doctors back in the office? Now, you and I have commented, you know, a couple episodes ago about, you know, the second location for provider enrollment may show up in a public place, but we're finding now that doctors are saying, well, you only have telehealth options. We're not going to let you come in the office because it's not available. And Sean, here's what's funny. When the practice said, can you show me where they have to allow that? I found it for Medicaid. Medicaid under consents. It wasn't even under coverage, where it says providers, you know, are to obtain consents. And then it says they must also allow beneficiaries to elect to return to in-person services at any time. Services via telemedicine may not be recorded. And it said beneficiaries may elect not to receive services via telemedicine. They cannot use beneficiaries' refusal to receive services via telemedicine as a basis to limit their access. That's that word again, access.
Now, is that Medi-Cal?
No, I found this on, it was on a general Medicaid site. And yes, it is California Medicaid, which is also Medi-Cal on some of it. We also have straight Medicaid. It's on Access for, which is the what they call Medicaid in Arizona. And it's also on Texas Medicaid. And it's also Michigan. But I didn't, and I saw it on a general statement. Then I saw Jack Resnick, the former AMA president. Prior to the PHE, he was talking about telehealth. And he was quoted saying, remember, telehealth is just another delivery of medicine. It's not another specialty.
That's right.
And so people kind of forget that. And if patients want to be seen in person, then you have to let them. But published guidance is really hard to find on this because you want to tell the physician, this is common sense. If your patient wants to see you in person because, you know, they have a suspicious lesion on their shoulder or because they have a palpable mass or they feel like they may be beginning stages of Parkinson's, neurological, but it only happens certain times. Wouldn't you think a physician and I'm going to be crass here, get their butts back in the office to see the patients. Why would they force them and say, oh, no, only telehealth? I realize. And the doctors are at home. This is what's really driving me crazy. So, yeah, I'm on a soapbox about this. What would you say to clients about this? I found guidance, but mostly for Medicaid. And then I did see United Healthcare as a policy. They said, if the patient wants to be seen in person, you cannot force telehealth on them.
Yeah, I would say, look, you know, obviously for state-funded plans like Medicaid, you know, check your specific state. I know Terry mentioned Michigan, Texas, California. You know, you have both conservative and liberal states in that grouping there. I would say check your states, right? As far as the plans go, again, you know, go to UHC, BCBS, you know, Aetna, Cigna, Humana, whoever it may be.
Let me ask you about liability. You're in the legal realm of healthcare. And let's say that the doctor refused or basically said, it's not available. I only have telehealth. And this was the patient's doctor for years. The patient complained to their payer, their plan, and maybe there wasn't a published rule on this. But then the patient ended up saying, well, fine, I'm just not going to go in then. I'm seeing patients doing that with physical therapy, where physical therapists are saying, well, you have to do it telehealth. And they're like, my husband can't continue to be my strength person that figures it out. I hate physical therapy over telehealth. Yeah. And so they're refusing to do it. Physical therapy has gone down by like 30% because patients are like, I want to come in and do it or not do it at all. And they don't like having to position the camera a certain way, et cetera. But from a legal perspective, and I know you're not an attorney, but you work in the legal realm of things.
Yeah.
What would a judge say when, you know, if something happened to a patient and they said, so you refused to see them in person? Why?
So I think there's two schools of thought on this, right? So if a physician has completely transitioned away from doing in-person, having what they call a brick and mortar location, and they only offer telehealth services, that could be an argument that's raised. I don't know how effective an argument.
Just so you guys know, some plans don't allow that.
Yes. No. And again, You know, listen, the public health emergency has forever changed the landscape of healthcare in a lot of ways. And as we go down the path, you know, further after the PHE, I can't say that it's changed things for the better. I really don't think healthcare has changed for the better. I think if anything, it's become harder for patients to get appropriate medical care at times. I think physician and clinician burnout is a real thing. I think we're still dealing with some folks that, you know, obviously there are tremendous shortages in healthcare. I mean, look, I think to your point, if plan documents that you're participating with a commercial insurance company stipulate that you have to offer both in-person and telehealth services, and you're only offering one or the other, then you're in potential breach of, you know, of your participation agreement.
But we're also talking about access, where we talked about, you know, every patient being able to access you. And if you limit their access, that's where you can run into a lot of trouble. And so be very mindful of that. And I'm talking to any physicians or staff that are listening, you know, limiting access only gets you complaints. When you open up access, which is what telehealth was supposed to do, it was a complement to in-person visits. Yeah. It was during the PHE only was it supposed to be instead of. And I know that the former HHS secretary said, well, we can't, you know, what does she say? We can't put the genie back in the bottle. Yeah. No, we can't. But it's been a free-for-all where it's even made healthcare more expensive. The billions of dollars, oh my gosh, well, they've spent the cost, on telehealth.
Yeah, the costs associated with care today. I mean,
it didn't go down. They were thinking, oh, well, that's going to be cheaper. And it's like, it really isn't. No. So access, just remember to understand your plans, understand what, you know, challenges certain patients have under the Disabilities Act, understand what patients want, maybe do a survey of, you know, do they want to come in versus telehealth? And also, because we don't have a standard of care for telehealth right now, we have suggestions. And that C2C document, which, you know, you can always Google it too. Just ask for the, you know, C2C CMS document and it'll come up. It also talks about, well, this is telehealth and this probably isn't telehealth. It's funny, there's actually a sheet on there that says, this is most likely telehealth and this is probably not telehealth. Well, you know, when people are, it says telehealth is likely appropriate for or less likely appropriate for. If you look at page 5 of that document, Sean, it's really funny because they you know, CMS nuances things where it covers their butt, not really helping everybody else.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, you know, CMS is a government entity and CMS writes policies that fit within, you know, their realm of how they want things done. It's just everybody has looked at CMS as being the gold standard by which all other insurance companies follow suit. So, you know, again, I think the majority of insurance companies acquiesce to what CMS sets as policies. But I think in many cases, as we're starting to recognize, the commercial payers are more strict or stringent on what they are willing to tolerate. Right. And I think to, you know, to kind of put a bow on this episode, and this has been an interesting one because as you were talking, I've been sitting here thinking about it, right? Because, you know, 5 years ago, we would have said telehealth what?
I couldn't get doctors to buy into telehealth. And I've been teaching it for 13 years where it first was even a glimmer.
Yeah.
You know, and they wouldn't even do it. And then the PHE hit and I said, hey, Terry, can you help us? I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I think about the fact that, you know, prior to the public health emergency, I think it was like 10% or less of Medicare beneficiaries received telehealth services. And then when the PHE hit, it was like 85% or something like that. It's crazy jump. Listen, the PHE, as I said, has forever changed the landscape of healthcare, at least for the immediate future. Telehealth services are high value targets, not because they pay a lot of money, but because they're high volume services. OIG, DOJ, CMS, commercial insurance companies are all targeting telehealth services because there's so many facets of it, right? One, you have to have an attestation from the patient acknowledging their wanting and willingness to participate in audio only or audio and or interactive with video. You have to have your duration of time documented. You have to have pretty good notes, you know, even now, 2021 and 2023, you know, guidelines, you still have to have pretty good notes to be able to justify clinically what is a medically appropriate history and examination. You still have to justify the medical necessity, the medical decision-making. So, I mean, it's not like these are just, you know, cakewalk services. I mean, there's a lot that goes into these. And personally, and this is just me in my personal opinion, personally, I think it's easier to have a patient seen in person than it is to do it over telehealth. I mean, right. You got so much wonkiness with, you know, if they live in a rural area, are they on HughesNet? And if they're on HughesNet, are they using Fusion or are they using just the basic program? You know, if they're, you know, in a metropolitan area, you know, is it Charter or Spectrum or AT&T or Verizon or, you know, is it 5G? Is it, you know, whatever it is? I mean, right. There's all kinds of barriers and hoops that you have to jump through. So, I don't know.
I think that there would be less of it if the payment parity didn't still exist till through 2024.
I agree with you.
I think it's always about money.
Yeah, it is about money. And I think as long as they're offering the same remuneration for these services through 2024, and I think it's through December 31st of 2024.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Providers are going to take the path of what they conceive as or perceive as the path of least resistance. And right. In some cases, I mean, if somebody said to me, I could sit on my couch, you know, watch Hijacked on Apple TV or The Morning Show or Ted Lasso, and in between episodes, I could do a telehealth visit with somebody while I'm in my, you know, jammies, you know, having bonbons, drinking coffee and waiting for Instacart to deliver my food, I'd probably say I'm going to do telehealth.
I see people doing it in the drive-through. One of my clients said, yeah, he was funny. He was a physician. He goes, I hate telehealth. He goes, patients don't dress for the appointment. He goes, I had a girl that was, you know, in the Sonic drive-through, and she goes, can you hold on a second? He goes, I had to listen to her order. I'm like, what?
Speaking of Sonic, can I just tell you, I love the BLT. And they're tater tots.
You're such a stray dog moment.
I do. Listen, but you got to tell them. You got to tell them.
I like their ice. I like cherry limeade. Their ice is
so amazing. That's what my daughter drinks. Ugh, I can't drink that. I like the blue raspberry, but with my pre-diabetes, I can't really mess with
it. I haven't drank it in years, but I like it.
But anyway, the key to their BLT is you got to tell them to put the mayonnaise on the side if you like mayonnaise. Because otherwise they will cake it on and it'd be like you're eating a frosted cake and it's just disgusting. But if you tell them just to put the mayo on the side and you kind of do it yourself, my God, they had the best crispy bacon. It's not very salty, great tomatoes, great lettuce, and the bread, that sourdough, it's really good. And they toast it perfectly.
Listen to this. We totally went off topic, but you know, good way to end. Everybody's going to be like, I'm hungry now. I want a Sonic BLT.
Oh yeah. And their tater tots are just the bomb.
Their tots are good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. And so there we have it. We wrapped it up in a lunch special.
That's right. I'm gonna name this one the Sonic Drive-Thru.
Our lunch and learn special today.
All right. So it's 11:30 now. We are just wrapping this one up, and I will be seeing Terry in 30 minutes for our coding compliance roundtable discussion with Scott Kraft, Christine Hall, Paul Spencer, and Stephanie Allard. And we're going to be going through the 2024 Medicare physician fee schedule proposed rule. Excited to do that. Excited to have the whole team back together, the whole panel back together in about 30 minutes from now. But I want to say thank you to my very good friend, Terry Fletcher, for once again taking time out of her very busy day and joining me on Pacific Coast time at 8 a.m. so that we can do our weekly podcast. So thank you, my friend.
Yep, it's been great. I like this episode.
Absolutely. A lot of fun. And don't forget, swing by Sonic, pick up a cherry limeade, a BLT with mayo on the side, and some tots. All right. We'll be back with another episode a little bit later this week. We'll have Legal with Lyles Parker, Robert Lyles, Ashley Morgan come and sit down and hang out with me for a little while. And actually, I think I have a couple of other pretty interesting ones coming up as well. So until then, remember, be good to yourself. But more importantly, remember, y'all be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media at The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.